It's Friday, December 18th, and scientists say we're two for two. We start here.
It looks like we have a favorable vote.
In an uncontested vote, a panel of scientists give a thumbs up to a second coronavirus vaccine.
We haven't really even talked that much about the nursing homes.
What happens when Moderna starts shipping? The hack took place months ago, but we could be dealing with it for years.
They could ultimately use this for a giant disinformation machine.
President Trump's former Homeland Security advisor tells us why government agencies should be scared. And if you're taking from the rich, is that bankers or first-time investors?
Robinhood just said everything's free. And in reality, nothing's ever really free.
Why the most popular investment app for young people just paid a multi-million dollar penalty. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. In the last 100 years, there were 5 really deadly days in this country where one event caused about 3,000 deaths on a day. One was the September 11th attacks. One was the Okeechobee Hurricane of 1928. The other 3 were this month. Yesterday, Johns Hopkins confirmed that Wednesday was the deadliest of them all. At least 3,656 confirmed fatalities all in one day from COVID-19.
At least 17 million Americans have now tested positive, a record 247,000 new cases in just the last 24 hours.
And remember that if lots of people are still positive, that means people are still spreading this disease at high rates, meaning those numbers are likely to continue to head up, not down.
And throughout Southern California, there are now 0 ICU beds available, forcing agonizing decisions.
You have to pick which one of your patients has the best chances of making it, and that's one you're going to have to give most of your care to.
At this point, thousands of lives depend on people maintaining distance from each other and a large part of this country getting vaccinated as quickly as possible. For the last week, that has rested on one federally approved vaccine from Pfizer. As soon as today, there could be a second.
All right, and good morning. And welcome to the 163rd meeting of Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory.
Remember when the FDA was considering whether to greenlight the Pfizer vaccine? Well, first, they gave a group of independent scientists a chance to ask questions directly to the vaccine maker. That group gives its recommendation. The FDA takes that under advisement and makes their call. Well, yesterday, those scientists heard not from Pfizer, but from Moderna. Our vaccine translator is back with us this morning. ABC's Anne Flaherty covered these hearings extensively. And Anne, were these hearings just a mirror image of the ones we saw last week?
They weren't, Brad. They were building on what they already know. They spent quite a bit of time talking about the Moderna vaccine. You know, it is different from the Pfizer vaccine.
So I wanted the last few slides, I just want to talk about the ethical impact of the unblinding.
But what we heard yesterday when these advisors were talking, it was mostly about a couple things. You know, one, what to do with the placebo group, these people who got the saline shots. But now we have a vaccine. If you're working in a hospital and you volunteered to be in this trial, that's actually an ethical issue.
If we do unblind, is we're disturbing the priority setting. That is, we are going to be vaccinating young, low-risk trial participants. And this will get out in the community very different than the pictures we saw after the authorization last week where it was.
Do you withhold these vaccines from people? So that was actually dominating much of the conversation yesterday.
And that concludes the vote. It looks like we have a favorable vote.
Ultimately, though, they agreed 20-0 that they see this as safe and effective, 94% effective, and that any risks outweigh the benefits of taking this vaccine.
I just wanted to make one or two comments before closing. Our vote was even more overwhelming tonight than last week. I don't think that anyone should interpret the difference in the
vote. So, you know, this vote was 20-0 last week on the Pfizer vaccine. We saw 17-4. People are asking, is there, you know, a big difference? Not really. The question with the Pfizer vaccine was that it would apply to people under the age of 18. They were seeking an authorization for people over 16. You know, scientists kind of get bogged down in those details a little bit, but it shouldn't be interpreted to mean that one vaccine is safer than the other. And we've even heard Dr. Fauci say that.
And so, okay, so let's say the FDA approves this, and by all, you know, indications is that they would pretty soon. What does that look like for the country? Like, when there's a second brand all of a sudden going out, does that mean we see it in more places? Does that mean different types of people are getting it?
Well, I think you have to look at this as like a slow rollout.
With Moderna now on track, Operation Warp Speed tells us they're going to ship out 8 million doses of vaccines next week, 6 million of the Moderna vaccine and 2 million more of the Pfizer vaccine.
You still have 20 million healthcare workers. You have 3 million people in nursing homes. These are the populations that they've identified as the high priority. I think it's going to take a while to get to all of them. And, you know, Brad, we haven't really even talked that much about the nursing homes and what's going on there. They're not even,
right.
Yeah, they're not even planning on a big nationwide rollout until on Monday.
Wait, why is that, Anne? Like, why has it been taking so long for people in nursing homes to get this compared to, like, you know, frontline healthcare workers?
Well, they're relying on pharmacies to do it.
Two of those private companies, CVS and Walgreens, have entered into a deal with the government's Operation Warp Speed to hasten distribution amongst nursing homes that opt in to the program.
The Pfizer vaccine is an ultra-cold storage. It has very specific handling instructions. Moderna, less so. It's a little bit easier to utilize. Mm. But, you know, hospitals have the capacity to handle really complicated instructions on this. The nursing homes have to rely on CVS and Walgreens to do vaccination clinics.
And so for us, you know, this is one of our core competencies. We're actually going to do over 400,000 flu shots this year in nursing homes, doing about 8,500 offsite clinics outside of our pharmacies.
So they are waiting on those logistics to deliver those vaccines.
Tonight, the truth is there's more vaccine out there than originally estimated. They've discovered bonus doses in some vials throughout hospitals all across the country. The FDA saying if you have extra doses, use them.
Last question, Anne, is do you get 5 doses from one of these vaccine vials, or do you get 6, or do you get 7? Because, like, now we're hearing about them using, like, the leftovers in vials, which sounds great, but, like, in an age of, like, disinformation and people being skeptical, like, why don't we know how many doses of vaccine you get from one of these bottles?
Right. I mean, what I equate this to is when you get, you know, liquid antibiotics for your kids, there's always a little bit of extra for cushioning in case there's a mishandling it, anything like that. I, you know, this isn't bad news. It's good news to have extra doses, but I think it does kind of speak to this bigger issue that we actually don't know how many people have gotten vaccinated.
We have not been as sure about additional Pfizer vaccine for the rest of December. Initially, we were going to get 200,000 next week and then 250,000 the following week, last week of December. Then they said you have none necessarily. We have production issues. We don't know the system that we use for that. They've actually populated a shipment for next week.
You know, we hear these estimates of how many doses have gone out. We're taking a lot of this on faith about how well this is going. You know, there's just a lot of unknowns right now.
And later today, Vice President Mike Pence actually taking this in front of the nation. We know, Anne Flaherty, all things vaccine. You'll be watching that as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
So while the government is rushing to get these vaccines out the door as quickly as humanly possible, in the background, this government is dealing with a profoundly worrisome development.
A big concern this morning after a large-scale hack of U.S. government agencies by Russian spies.
You might have heard about this hack at the U.S. Treasury Department. Well, at first, it was the Treasury Department. Then the Commerce Department said, actually, they got us too. Then the Department of Homeland Security.
The Treasury and Commerce Departments have been hit in what my sources are calling a highly sophisticated attack from the Kremlin that may have also targeted other agencies.
Yesterday, word started to leak that the Department of Energy and the group that controls the U.S. nuclear stockpile were also affected. And if all that wasn't scary enough, yesterday, government officials put out reports describing hacking techniques that they had never really seen before, which is a whole other problem, because if you know what you're looking for, you can kind of check that off the list. Good here, oh, they got us there. What if you don't even know what you're looking for? Could hackers still be accessing these departments or other ones? Tom Bossert is the former Homeland Security advisor to President Trump. He served in Homeland Security offices for years. Tom, first things first, how big was this hack? How important in terms of magnitude was this?
Brad, the scope of this thing really cannot be overstated. It apparently stems back to work that the hackers appear to be Russians started probably a year ago or more. And the access that they've gotten into their targets seems to have started 6 to 9 months ago. So we're seeing a potential of 18,000 network customers with hackers in their networks, and they've been there for months. So the magnitude of this is significant, and the consequences are ongoing because we don't know which of those networks still have bad guys on them.
Wait, without going in, like, we can go into tech, but without, just in layman's terms, how would you access all these different agencies and companies at once? Like, they all have incredible security, I assume.
You know, the math is really in favor of a technique like this, and it's really favoring the bad guys.
So as a managed service provider, we help SolarWinds with implementation across the federal government space and DOD.
In this case, they hacked in slowly to a company called SolarWinds, and they put their code inside the Orion software that SolarWinds sells. And then when SolarWinds made their updated software available to all of its otherwise good and innocent customers, certainly most of the federal government and 425 of the Fortune 500 companies in the United States, the work had been done. The updated software was all appropriately and digitally signed. It looked good and clean. There'd be no reason for any security apparatus or professional to stop that from happening. The customers went and downloaded that Trojan horse right into their networks, and it had on it what looks to be Russian malware that gave access to the hackers.
Oh, you're saying like forget going after each of our phones and each of our phone numbers. Like, just infect the next iOS or Android update and you get all of our phones.
That's right. You never distrust the update. You make the update. But if the update's corrupted, that one corruption can reach thousands of targets. And in this case, it most certainly did.
So, I mean, what could you potentially get from it? Like, if you're the Russians, is it more like, oh, no, Russians have my social security number? Or like, is it a bigger problem than that? Like, what kind of issues could we actually be looking at here?
One of the biggest, I think, mistakes being made right now by a lot of people, otherwise really credible people, is to conclude that this is simply an act of large-scale espionage. In other words, spying. Now, will they spy? Certainly. We don't know if it's just spying. They could do any number of things. Of course, they could just completely shut down that network or destroy it in some sense.
Sources telling ABC News that the suspected Russian government hackers may have been looking at sensitive emails and communications of U.S. officials since the spring.
They could also use it to falsify data, disrupt communications, impersonate a person on email and send a disruptive email internally or externally. They could ultimately use this for a giant disinformation machine or malign influence machine.
And word tonight that the Energy Department and its National Nuclear Security Administration, which oversees the nation's nuclear weapons stockpiles, had some of its networks breached.
And so let me give you an example. Imagine if you were a very important person, CIA director, or somebody that obviously possessed information that was valuable, and you came home one day and your door was kicked open. And your staff said, well, sir, we meant to tell you, the Russians have kicked in your front door and they've been in your home for 6 to 9 months. Well, it would be very important to then make sure the door was fixed and to replace the lock and maybe even fingerprint it to see if there was any evidence you could find. But that really wouldn't be your primary concern when you went to bed that night, thinking, well, I'm sure the craftsmanship of the door replacement will be solid. Of course, what you'd be thinking is, oh my goodness, what's been going on in here for the last 6 to 9 months? I'd be looking inside every plant. I would be looking inside, you know, every light socket. I'd be unscrewing light bulbs. And eventually I'd get to the point where I'd probably be ripping the walls down looking for implants.
Could you comment on the Russian hackers breaching several federal agencies? How serious was this breach? And is the Trump administration considering retaliating?
Look, the U.S. government, we're aware of all of these reports. We're taking all necessary steps to identify and remedy.
How long does that go? Like, how long do you think the fallout from this actually goes?
You know, if all we do is hunt on networks that are already compromised, the bad guys, it appears to be the Russians, will be watching the hunters and evading them real time. Mm. That hunting work will be going on for years. I think there's a number of other things that have to be done. It's going to be costly. And then from a geopolitical perspective, I think the ramifications of this are going to move well into the Biden presidency, if not the entire duration of it.
All right, Tom Bossert, former Homeland Security Advisor to President Trump himself, now an ABC News contributor. Tom, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Next up on Start Here, it looks like a gaming site, except on this game, you can go bankrupt. We're back after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yesterday, we learned that in 1 week, nearly 900,000 Americans filed new unemployment claims, meaning we are still seeing beyond record numbers of layoffs every week. And yet on that same day, stock markets closed at record highs. Stocks are doing great. And when stocks are doing great, investors can usually find new money to gamble with. Well, yesterday, the Securities and Exchange Commission announced a $65 million settlement with a company that has exploded this year. That company is called Robinhood, as in take from the rich, give to the poor, Robinhood. But even beyond this federal settlement, critics say they are actually encouraging young, not incredibly wealthy people to make terrible choices with their money. And this app actually tells you a lot about where the future of consumer finance could be heading. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze covers tech and finance. Elizabeth, what is Robinhood? Like, I feel like I heard everyone start to talk about this as the pandemic was happening, but it's been around for a while, but how does it work?
Everyone's been talking about it, and everyone has been trading on Robinhood too this year. It's gained more than 3 million new customers just so far this year. A lot of these are first-time traders, and that's really what Robinhood is about.
Look at you. You always did things your way.
It's an app that tries to attract younger millennial, even younger than millennial users to trade and to get into trading for the first time.
Welcome to the future of investing.
It's a lot flashier. It's something that would certainly appeal to people who are used to using apps for most of their day-to-day things. So a little bit like Venmo transformed how we give money to each other and transfer funds, Robinhood is a little bit like that for trading.
Couldn't be easier to make a trade using the Robinhood app. 3 taps.
You can see a list of stocks right off the bat that you could just say, press, I want to press and buy Tesla today.
I just bought some stock. 0 commission.
The big thing about Robinhood, and one of the reasons why it's become so popular, is that there are no trading commissions. So you don't have to pay per trade. And that has really, really kind of shaken up the world of Wall Street, where typically, you know, you might have to pay for every single trade that you make. And this is something that Robinhood has come in and said, we're going to make this so easy for you to do. And that's not going to be how it works for us.
Well, so what's the problem, right? I mean, this SEC settlement meant that Robinhood did not have to acknowledge any wrongdoing at all. But what did the SEC have a $65 million problem with in the first place?
So the problem is that a company has to make money somehow. So if you're not making money by charging per trade, you have another way of making money. And in the case of Robinhood, it's called payment for order flow. Okay, I'm Elizabeth. I'm going to buy some shares on this app. And then someone actually has to execute that trade. So it gets a little technical, but there's a whole back-end process to make sure that that trade goes through. And Robinhood would use what's called a third-party market maker. They pay Robinhood for the right to make these trades. Mm-hmm. Robinhood, by not being clear and transparent in that, could essentially pick and choose which of these third-party market makers it wants to do business with and could be making more money from them. Whereas, you know, the laws of trading would say you actually need to go to the one that's offering you the lowest price, that is the best deal for the consumer. So what this SEC fine is about is essentially Robinhood did not adequately disclose this process to their customers about how these trades are executed. Robinhood just said everything's free. And in reality, nothing's ever really free. And the SEC is essentially saying that Robinhood wasn't clear enough about how these trades are executed and it needed to be a little bit more specific in that process.
I really love that Robinhood offers a free stock upon sign up.
A lot of my friends, we try to compete to see who can recruit the most people because we all want to get the free stock.
They have made trading so accessible, but also a big part of their business is getting people to stay on their app as much as possible.
Okay, and order execute. Let's go.
And
okay,
because they're targeting this kind of first-time user, this first-time trader, a lot of people get really hooked on it who don't know that much about trading.
I don't think of it as a dollar. I think of it as 100 penny stocks.
If you look at the amount of trades that are executed on Robinhood versus some of its competitors, there are loads more every day that are happening.
Why did I invest? Why did I spend my life savings? Oh my God. And then I'm like, oh, okay, looks good.
Part of that is that people are sitting at home during the pandemic. They are bored or they're using, you know, this app as a way to keep themselves entertained, almost like they would gambling or sports betting.
You made $25,000 so far today. I'm down $4,000.
It's kind of like the gamification of trading here, where trading becomes a game for the average person at home. How much money can you make in any given day? Also, how much money could you lose? Mm. And it becomes this sort of entertainment for people that goes well beyond what we've seen in the past with trading, which is, you know, typical Wall Street audience or at home audience even.
Right, but that's my question. Is this just a cooler, sleeker version of something that we've seen before? Like the day before the SEC announced the settlement, the state of Massachusetts was bringing a lawsuit against Robinhood saying you're targeting people, like you're bringing in people that do not have financial experience. Well, it's like, sorry, you know, don't other financial firms do that all the time? Like they make you feel like you're in the game. They give you power over buying and selling stocks. Like, is there a difference?
And, you know, well, Robinhood would say it's important for people to be able to find a way to get involved in the stock market and for us to spread the wealth a little bit more to these first-time traders. Of course, the problem is that if you're a first-time trader and you don't know what's at risk, you can make more money, but you can also lose a lot more money, too.
Thursday, he logged on and saw this in his account. His family says he took a screen grab, thinking he had ruined his and his family's financial lives.
There was a really tragic case earlier this year with a 20-year-old college student from Massachusetts. His name was Alex Kearns. And basically, he was one of these people who became really active on Robinhood
and began making trades, some very complicated investments that have different options to them.
Alex Kearns logged into his account one day and saw that the balance on his account was negative $730,000. I mean, that is a huge number.
Right.
It turns out that that figure included some trades that were actually even incomplete, meaning maybe he hadn't fully lost all of that money yet, but because these products are changing so quickly and so volatile, you know, that was how he saw it at that point. And very tragically, Alex Kearns ended up dying by suicide. And he wrote in a note that he had no clue what he was doing in hindsight. So Brad, this is a really tricky moment for Robinhood because they're seeing this huge growth in popularity. More people are using the app than ever before. And they're also looking to possibly go public. Reports that it could go public very soon. It's valued at close to $11 billion from what we've seen based on some estimates. It's gotten more and more funding this year as people see how popular the app is. So it's trying to really weigh these considerations of becoming a big company. It's no longer just a flashy startup that can brand itself as sort of a fintech darling. It's really becoming something that's more mainstream. So it's dealing with a lot more scrutiny from regulators. And after the SEC announcement, we did hear some calls even already on Capitol Hill that more investigations of Robinhood may be necessary, given the fact that there are still questions about how it's doing business and if it's transparent enough with its customers.
Yeah, we actually reached out to Robinhood ourselves. They gave us a statement saying, quote, "This settlement relates to historical practices that do not reflect Robinhood today," end quote, that because they've actually changed some of their systems in recent years. As for the allegations that they're kind of gamifying trading, luring in these young, inexperienced traders, they say that is not true. They don't advise clients on what to do, and they've added safeguards and educational features on their app. Elizabeth Schulze, thanks so much for breaking it down.
Thanks so much, Brad.
Run as quickly as you can. Now, does everybody understand?
Yes.
And one last thing. It's never a good sign when you come out of a building and birds are just sitting there waiting for you. Well, now, take that level of creepiness and imagine a huge flock of vultures. In Bunn, North Carolina, residents have noticed flocks of vultures congregating on certain roofs, sometimes 20 at a time, which is creepy but also destructive. Vultures are known to damage places they congregate. They're ripping up roof shingles and electrical wiring. So the leaders of Bunn decided to scare them away with a cannon.
Today I'm going to demonstrate the animal bird cannon.
Maybe not the cannon you're thinking of. A propane cannon is a thing farmers use all the time to scare away birds, deer, anything that might eat their crop. It looks like something that could launch a Nerf football, but this makes a 130 decibel boom. That is as loud as a gunshot. And later this month, that thing will be going off multiple times a day from the roof of the school gymnasium. And if you think that could get old real quickly, just remember that when vultures get scared, they expel their most recent meal to make themselves lighter for takeoff. The bottom line here is birds always win. Okay, they always win. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therez, Josh Cohan, Trevor Hastings, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimbel, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, Abe Velez, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Scott Withers, Eve Tro, and Jennifer Genovi. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.